Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. It's Life Coach Russ Terry. We're here for another awesome broadcast on the Life Coach Radio Network. Tonight, my first ever time having guests in studio, live from our studios in Jersey City, New Jersey, right outside New York City. I have the incredible authors of the book, You Matter. And if you've ever doubted if you matter, or if you know someone who has, this next hour is for you, because they have so much incredible stuff in their book that they shared with me, and I can't wait for you to hear all the wisdom that they have. In reading the book, I got chills, and meeting them in person just now, I got chills, and hopefully you will too. So without further ado, Melvin Miller is a recognized trainer, coach, preacher, and creative artist who has extensive experience designing and delivering programs and workshops concerning a variety of topics. His expertise is in the area of leadership, diversity, social innovation, corporate responsibility, I used to work in that too, personal transformation and healing, radical inclusion, and youth, young adult development. Melvin, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. All right. And Federica Baldan, did I say it right? I probably should have asked that before we went on the air, right? Offers more than 20 years of experience delivering spiritual and experiential trainings designed to uplift and inspire people around the country. She's also a prominent life coach, yay, and corporate trainer. Federica's style of coaching supports people in shifting away from ego toward a life of purpose grounded in forgiveness, gratitude, and contribution. Ah, that is just so beautiful. Federica, is so good to finally meet you in person and to have you here.
It's wonderful to meet you, too. Thank you so much for having us and for hosting us. I really appreciate it. I'm excited.
And I'm excited. And it's funny, you know, I usually do these people call into the show, but Federica suggested, well, why don't we come to you or do it together? And I thought, oh, my God, that's freaking such a good idea. So I'm so excited to do this. So thank you for that suggestion, and hopefully this will be the first of many times. So let's start with you, Federica. How did the two of you get linked up for this project?
Oh, that's good. We actually met several years ago, I don't know, six, seven maybe years ago, in an organization that I actually trained for, Momentum Education, in Manhattan, New York. And I was a trainer for them, and Melvin participated in the workshops that we provide, and that's how Melvin and I met, and then decided to work together.
Wow, so the teacher and the student are now collaborators, which is so funny because we're talking about the radio network, and one of my teachers from the Life Coach Training School I went to is one of the hosts on the network, and I know, because I've experienced it, it's a cool feeling when, you know, the master and the student can become one for a project. Melvin, what was the transformational moment for you that led you to want to collaborate and work with Federica?
Well, Federica and I have had the blessing of knowing each other and working with each other now for 7 years. I like to think I was a good student. And really right after I graduated from the program, I went into volunteering for the company and then eventually working with the company. And Federica and I we're both trainers for the company, and we have different but very similar training styles, at least come from, to the context from which we come from. And we were looking at this project, and when the BBC first asked me about the project, the first person I thought about was Federica. And I said, you know, I'd like to do this project in a collaboration. And when I told them about Federica and who she was and her work, of course, like everyone instantly falls in love with her. And, you know, it was really a spirit-filled collaboration from the very beginning. We have a very distinct process. Federica thinks and I think, but I write. And so we went through that, and it was just amazing. I think she's an amazing coach, an amazing trainer, and it's a privilege and a blessing to work together.
Well, there is so much great content in this book that the two of you have put together that I want to get into it because I have so much that I want to get to. But before we get into it, Melvin, I just want to comment on the fact that early in the book it's mentioned this inspiring story of you opening your home to kids in Harlem who needed a place. And we were just saying before I came on air that I have done a lot with Big Brothers Big Sisters, and my little brothers both grew up in Harlem and went to Thurgood Marshall Academy. So it's destiny that we have met, and I like meeting people who are similarly minded and like giving back to their communities, because I just think that's something so important. So I just wanted to quickly recognize you for that, and certainly people can see the story for themselves in the book. Okay, so You Matter. Federica, what was the transformational moment in your life where you were thinking that you didn't matter, and then you came to the conclusion that you did?
Wow, that's a good question. I think it actually was a very long process. I initially came to that conversation of mattering, what it is to matter, over 20 years ago when I did the similar work that Melvin and I train. I heard the conversation, you matter, or that I matter, and so if I matter, then we all matter. But it was a concept. But then as I started to really live my life from a place of purpose, from a place of where my passions led me, the evidence that I mattered became clearer and clearer. So it was almost as if my recognition of my mattering came in the impact that others experienced as a result of who I was or what I chose to do. So, you know, I think it was kind of like a long process to get to that. But I think I think the instance when I realized I mattered was a person saying to me, you have made a difference in my life. And if it weren't for you, I wouldn't have accomplished this or have my relationship healed or have the career of my dreams or feel fulfilled in my life. And so it's in the impact that I see in other people's lives that I recognize the difference I make, and that my expression matters in the world in a unique way, because we all have a unique expression. We all matter, but we all have a unique expression, and express it differently and give it differently, and it has all sorts of levels. It's parallel to the unique expressions on the planet. You know, we have sunflowers and roses and mice and elephants. I don't know why I'm thinking about that, but I'm just thinking of just the myriad of expression that is on this planet. And so it's just, I think, important for all of us to embrace who we are and our unique expression, and that what's that line, you know, you matter to someone, even if you don't think, you know, there's someone who you matter to more than anyone. And I think when you really discover that, you then have, I guess, the invitation or the choice to matter to more than just one. And so I think that that's really the calling to living a life of purpose and to mattering.
I really like that you said that it was a long process for you, because that may very well help people listening to this who maybe are thinking, okay, do I need to make an immediate transformation, or is it okay to make a gradual transformation? So I'm glad you shared that. And I also really like that you said what you said about people telling us that we matter to them, because in so many things in life, when you tell somebody what you're thinking, it can just have such an incredible, amazing impact. And there are so many instances where we don't share what we're thinking about somebody, whether it's a loved one, a business colleague, or what have you. And I think the more we can tell people what we're thinking, the better. All right, so one last question before we get into each of the chapters and things of that nature. Melvin, what is your You Matter story? Your, the moment that you realize that you matter.
Well, I think that it's an interesting thing because I don't think there was a moment where I thought I didn't matter, but I wasn't aware that I did matter. And so somewhere in that in-between space, I think still I languished for a little while. And the tipping moment, there's been multiple tipping moments, multiple transformation moments along the way, because I think one of the beautiful things about transformation is that it's never over. We're always constantly growing and developing and moving to new levels and finding deeper meanings about who we are and why we are who we are and what we are to the universe. But I think one of the transformational moments was this. So many, let me think. The one that comes right to mind was when I was in seminary, I was traveling with one of my professors, Dr. Seung Kyung Chung, and I was dancing and we were traveling around and we were talking about, me being straight or bisexual, and I was struggling with it, and I thought it was a sin. I thought that God just didn't like me, like that I was disqualified because of my sexuality, you know, and that tormented me, and that had a hold on my understanding and sense of mattering in the world and mattering in God, and it undermined all of who I was. And so I struggled with that constantly through seminary and through everything. And one day we were on a plane, and she knew I was struggling back and forth, and she was trying to convince me. She said, Melvin, I've been doing theology for over 20 years, and I promise you it's not a sin, and God loves you. And I just couldn't believe it. And then she said one thing, and she said, I remember we were landing, and we were almost to the ground. And she said, Melvin, I don't understand. If God loves you, why don't you love yourself? And in that moment, I experienced the love of God. Before that, I knew it existed. I understood it. I read about it. I heard stories of it. But in that moment, I experienced it. And I remember looking out the window. I saw the sun setting. And I remember putting my hands in my lap, and I just cried. Because it was the first time that I felt the love of God. And inside of that love, there was a sense that, oh, my God, I actually matter.
Wow, that's such a good story. And so I think there are so many instances of people who are religious in the church, you know, whether in your case, you know, you work in the church or who, you know, go to church all the time. And when there's a question of sexuality, there is such a conflict there of what you should do and what you shouldn't do and what the church says and what the preachers or priests say. So I think there are a lot of people out there that can relate to that story that you just shared. All right, so let's get into the meat of the matter here. So if you have one thing that you want people to take away from this book, obviously, there's the concept of You Matter, that's the title. But what do you want them to take away from either the book itself, the show tonight, or both? Federica, let's go to you.
Well, that's a great question because I've actually really been thinking about this recently. And, you know, often life is referred to as a game. You know, the game of life and living the game of life and how you play the game of life. But, you know, when I really think about the big takeaway that I would love people to get from this book is that I think the only game that's really worth playing is the game of awakening oneself to who they are and why they're here. Because I think that each of us has a significant contribution to make in the greater awakening of humanity. And I think that that's the game that that's being played right now. And I don't want to say game to diminish the importance of it or the depth of what we're doing here together as a humanity. But I think that it's evident as books come and shows come and Oprah has a network, you know, and it's so evident that we're moving into a new age. And that age is one of awareness and spirituality and connection, and spirituality not in any specific practice, but in an inclusive way. And so I want what I really want people to come away with is really recognizing who they are as infinite and complete and a full expression, and that they can make a difference and contribute, and that they, in their single expression, can impact countless number of people. And that I think that we're all here to awaken each other. I think that we're all here to uplift each other and to have people connect to who they are. And I think that's why I'm here. But I think that when we all awaken and express our purpose, how we express it, it awakens others to their purpose and their possibility and why they're here. And so I think that's what one of the things that I would want people to come away with.
And you'll be happy to know that was a huge takeaway for me from reading the book. It's just, you know, really that by you matter, that means I matter and I can make the world a better place by realizing that I matter and by having an incredible legacy and living a life with purpose on purpose, as you both say in the book. All right, so Melvin, let's go to you. Let's get into the book itself. Chapter one, Who Are You? Who Am I? You guys talk about the surface I am and the deeper I am. And there are so many people out there, we're all nodding our heads, that worry about doing the right thing according to social norms and what people may think or what's popular or looks good. So, Melvin, for people who are stuck in that zone where they're so worried about what other people think and all of that stuff, all of that surface I am stuff, what can you tell them tonight to put them on the path towards the deeper I am?
You know, that's one of my favorite practices. You know, we are all here on purpose. And I think one of the fundamental flaws that trip us all up, as you already indicated, is that there's this popular culture that tells us we're supposed to be alike. And so we find ourselves in this almost insanity of trying to be like everyone else, but we know that each and every one of us are created differently on purpose. Everyone is different. There are no, even scientifically, our DNA tells us that no two people are the same. Not even twins who share the same womb and come to the planet at the same time. And I'm a twin, 1 minute apart. Yet my brother and I are two completely different beings on the planet. So that tells us that we are intentionally, by every schematic, by every context, made purposely different. And so the craziest thing, which we sometimes don't realize consciously or unconsciously, is that we're trying to be like someone else. But that's not the wonder. That's not the amazement, the awesome. The awesomeness is our individuality, that there is no one else ever that's been like me or that will be like me or that is like me in this time or any other time. That if I don't express myself authentically, that expression will never be expressed ever. And so inside of that, our expression is what makes the difference. Our expression is what makes our own lives come alive and others. And with us being ourselves freely, it gives other people permission to be themselves freely. You know, and then I think that's where the power of who we are and the anointing. And so I leave people with, be you, because everyone else is taken.
That is so incredible. And I love, love, love what you said. I need to write this down so that I can tweet it tomorrow. But that you said we are all created different. because you always hear that saying, oh, we're all created equal. But we're not. We're created different.
We're created different, and that's the part of the paradox. You know, we have one humanity, but different parts, different distinct parts. And that, even that distinct, we talk about a distinction, that individually each of us are a distinction. We are distinguished one from the other, one being from the other, one gift from the other, one talent from the other. You know, and it's just, it's amazing to me to see that, because I get to see you and all of your awesomeness, and I get to be me. I think the greatest gift in life is to be, to simply be. And we miss out on that, and we're cheated from that by trying to be something else. And we can't even if we just sat and thought about that for a moment, I can't be anyone else. Even me trying to be someone else is me being me trying to be someone else, you know? And so it's an incredible freedom, you know, and it frees us from the insanity.
That actually, and that brings something, you know, there's a metaphor that is we each have a piece in the body of God, let's say, in spirit. So some of us are the heart, and some are the feet, and some are the legs, and some are the arms. And so imagine if the heart said, I don't want to be the heart, you know, I want to be, why can't I be, you know, the brain or something? And it's really interesting, because I've seen it time and time again when people come together to create something. I've seen it in, you know, in the groups that I train and the leadership trainings that I do, that when they come together to create something, what's so amazing is that every person has an expertise, or what they contribute is needed for the project to be successful. And so someone is great at, you know, the organizational piece, while somebody else is great at the promotional piece, while somebody else is great at something else. And so, you know, just to say, it's not, you know, sometimes we compare ourselves to others and decide, oh, well, I want to be that. I want to be the you know, the heart, let's say. When, you know what, the job that you have, or your purpose, your expression, it was given to you on purpose. You know, so, you know, if you, you know, if I'm a singer and you're not a singer, it doesn't mean that I'm better than you or less than you. It's just a different expression. You were given a different gift to express. And so, you know, everyone has a piece in the body of spirit. And so I just wanted to add to that, because that's what kind of came up for me in that conversation.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I want to read something that I wrote down when I read this chapter. You are who God says you are, whole, perfect, and complete, infinitely loved, infinitely creative and powerful, and forever held in love and grace. That is just so beautiful that I just had to make sure that we shared that with the listeners tonight. So if we look at this, as you say, and choose this, there will never be doubt or worry. And I see you nodding. You know, there so many people doubt and worry. So how can people shift from the doubt and the worry into this great place that you just described, where they're perfect, they're complete, they're infinitely loved, infinitely creative, powerful, and forever held in love and grace?
That is a moment-to-moment choice. It really is a continuous, lifelong process. And I'm not saying that it's easy, but it can be. But I think it requires a practice. I think it requires a continuous practice. I see Melvin wanting to contribute something to this. I think it's a... listen, you know, I say this because I've experienced this, but it also came from years and years of the own work that I did in my own life. You know, I know I have not arrived to this book without doing the work myself. You know, I can't tell you what to do if I haven't been willing to do it myself. So it's really a moment-to-moment process. And I actually think, you know, a piece that one of the practices, which is around gratitude, is I know for myself when I have really connected to gratitude, if when I really even connect to the gratitude of the air that I breathe, when I connect to the gratitude of a body that works without me even having to think about it, a heart that beats, lungs that breathe, a brain that works constantly, when I really connect to all that that has been provided for me, and all the how provided for we are, I can't help but, if you really connect to the abundance that exists on the planet and in the universe, you are a part of that. We are a part of that. And when I think about that, I think that gratitude is the key to access to that space, to that place of spirit, of wholeness. And it's an ongoing process because there are times when I don't feel perfect, whole, or complete. But my work, the willingness to do the work myself and to challenge my past, to challenge my beliefs, to challenge all of that would bring me to that place. And it's not for the faint of heart. It requires a willingness to do the work and to challenge what you believe. You know, question everything that you believe. Question the thoughts that you have. Is it in alignment with infinite abundance? If it's not, and if it's something that doesn't work for you, then don't believe that. You know, life is an empty canvas that we draw upon and paint upon. And so what are you, what would you choose to believe? Who do you choose to be? And it's an ongoing process.
Oh, my gosh. Well, there's just so much great stuff in this book, so much stuff in chapter one, but I want to get to all the other chapters, too. We could do one of those special, own two-hour episodes tonight, but we'll try and keep it somewhat close to an hour. So, all right, Melvin, let's go back to you. Chapter two, who is the author of your life? I love this concept, the power of choice, and I love this because so many people are passive observers of their life instead of taking the bull by the horns and making changes. So what can people do? How do you help them to become the author for their life?
Oh, this is one of my fundamental live by distinctions, as we call them, the power of choice. So often we give our power away and don't even know it. So often we think that we have to do things. I have to do this. I have to go to work. I have to take out the laundry. I have to be with my friends. I have to love these people. I have to be. But the truth of the matter, we don't have to do anything. And as long as we always have to do something, then it'll be, it'll be without joy and without freedom. And actually, one of the things that oftentimes people forget is that we actually have a choice in everything we do. Everything, 99.9% of our life is choice. There's 1% I give to some things that we don't have choice over. But 99.9% of the things we have choice. Everything we do is a choice. Everything we are is a choice. Even choosing not to choose is a choice. And when I think about the power of choice, and sometimes we say, well, I don't have the choice of how I was raised. I don't have a choice of where I lived, what I have, who my mom and dad were or weren't, what I didn't have growing up, who did me wrong, how I was victimized or not. I don't have a choice around that. Now, that part may be true, but we always, always, always have a choice how we will relate to those events in our lives. And that will either give us power or disempower us. And so when we look at that power of choice and we talk about the author of our life, our story, our life story is being written every single day. And so often there are people who hurt us, who did us wrong, jobs, companies, ex-boyfriends, ex-lovers, ungrateful children, horrible parents, whoever it is. And we live our whole life in reaction to that event, to those people. And so those people and those things, those companies are going on with their lives. They're making their money. Those people are walking around, living their life, all those things, and they're walking around with all our power. They're doing their own thing, and here we are stuck, thinking, oh, them, this, that, and the third. And we just have given our power away rather than choosing to take the power back and relate to those circumstances and situations in a way that empower us, that strengthen us, that frees us, that even pushes us forward to walk into the power of our purpose, the power of our living. You know, and so when you have that choice, when you really recognize, you know what? Everything I do, I have a choice around. Now, of course, there are consequences. And we've lived life and made some choices, whether consciously or unconsciously, that have yielded us some consequences that didn't feel good, that didn't taste good, that didn't seem good. But when you get now, it comes from unconscious to conscious. Is the choice I'm making consistent with the dream or the vision I have with my life, of my life? It brings a certain depth of awareness around the power of choice. And when you get that power, with every choice, there's a stroke on the pages of our life. Every choice is a sentence that either takes us closer or farther away or keeps us stagnant to the life we dream about, the purpose we believe in, who we believe we are, and what we plan to do with our lives. And that's the power of choice and who is authoring our lives. And actually, at the end of the day, the pen is our own life, but it's a choice of who we give it to or whether we take it in our own hands and write our own story.
I love that analogy with the pen. That's just so, so wise. So how can people hearing this move more into choices and not the choosing not to choose choice, but the good choices where they are taking more control of their life? What's a good tangible example maybe that you can share with people?
I pray that this is tangible. Well, one thing is, I always ask again that question I said a few minutes ago, is the choice I'm about to make consistent with the vision I have for my life? So, one of the wonderful places that people often get bogged down is in relationships, friendships, personal relationships. And so sometimes, for example, we go on a date. And the first time we meet this person, you can kind of know generally from the first time you meet, oh, red flag or yellow flag, slow down. Sometimes we have green flags, go, go, go. And then we make the choice. And sometimes we make the choice from, I don't want to be lonely, versus from the choice of, from the place of, is this what I want? You know, and so where is the place that we're making our choices from? And then in that situation, you get to say, no, this choice is not consistent with the vision I have for my life. So I get to make a different choice. Even with our workplace, if we're at work, I don't like my job. Okay. So now, what choices can you make so that you do love your job? Or do you find a different job? Now, of course, there's fear in there, but you still have a choice to make. And even if you say, okay, how am I relating to this job? See, sometimes we're in a place and we stop choosing the job. So I'm working at my job, and it becomes a have to. I have to be here. I have to be here. No, you don't have to be there. But if you choose to be here, there, that will be your experience of the job will be powerful, joyful, empowered. If you constantly a have to, and you're giving the power away, it will be, I hate my job. I hate these things. You know, I have a friend who she always tells me she travels. 70% of her life is traveling. It's a job, and she. After a while, she has stopped, quote-unquote, choosing travel. So every time if you went to the airport, what kind of ticket agent you think she had? Horrible. Whenever she got on the plane, what kind of seats did she have? Horrible seats. What were the stewardess like? The worst ever in the world. Whenever she went somewhere and she had to call over a taxi, what kind of taxi driver? Oh, the craziest ones in the world. And she just realized, she said, you know what? This is not going to work. If I'm going to continue to choose a life where 70% of my job is travel, I'm going to have to make some different choices. So in the moment, she actually re-chose traveling. She said, no, I do choose this job, and I do choose to travel, because she could have chose not to, but she said no, that's what she wanted to do. So once in her mind, in her heart, she chose travel What kind of agent do you think she got? The kindest ones. When she got on a plane, what kind of seats did she think she got? First class. When she came into the taxi driver, what kind of taxi driver did she get? The kind that took her everywhere and didn't ask for a tip and then was very talkative and kind, you know? And these are the same things, you know, just like in our relationships. We wonder why, you know, we're with our husbands or our wives or our girlfriends. And before, when it was beginning, it was beautiful and bliss and everything. And then 1 year, 2 years down the road, then it's like, oh, I have to, and all of a sudden that left. It's because we stopped choosing our mate. We stopped choosing our lover, and it became I have to. And we say, well, how did that happen? What do we do? Well, what happens oftentimes is we begin to compare our past choices with fantasy choices that weren't available to us at the time. So when we met our lover, person, or whomever it is at the time, this was the greatest lover. This was the greatest person. Oh, my God, their eyes twinkle. And whenever they spoke, it was just awesome and everything. And when we took the job at the time, it was the best job. It changed our lives, everything. And now 2 years down the line, what do? We begin to compare our choices. So we say we compare it with the job that has, you know, 5 weeks vacation, and we come in and when we want to, and we have the largest expense budget. We compare our present lover with the lover who, you know, on TV and who always says yes to everything we do and comes home and there's roses and they do and they cook dinner and everything. We compare our past choices. But I always say we made the best choice given the wisdom we had at the time. You know, and so it's a, no, this was my choice. And sometimes it's either re-choosing it or choosing something different. But it's the power of choice.
I love it. Now, you just mentioned the past a few minutes ago, and in this chapter, guys say we can also rewrite our lives. The meaning of something in the past can change, which is such great insight. I never looked at it that way before, but I'm so glad that you shared it. Federica, what is a good example of the meaning of something in the past being able to change?
Wow, that's a great question. Oh, God, how many examples could there be? You know, it's, you know, there's a joke that I heard that I was a sidekick to, which was, you know, you know, my parents put me in a glove compartment, and so I just got to be comfortable in small spaces. But you know, which is an interpretation to that kind of situation. But you know, for example, you know, I was married in the past. I was married, and you know, it didn't work. Obviously now I'm, you know, we divorced, and so it didn't work. But I could have given the relationship, you know, I could have said that the relationship, you know, was a disaster, or that it, you know, was a mistake, or, you know, I could have decided that because of the situation that it was, you know, a failure, when it really wasn't. You know, if I, how I chose to look at it, how I chose to give meaning or interpret what occurred in the relationship, I could use to either disempower me or, you know, have an experience of wasted time, quote unquote, which I don't think is ever really possible because I think everything is purposeful, and you can use everything to grow. And so I really see the, you know, the time I chose to be thankful for the relationship because there were years of great joy and partnership, and to even be thankful for the lessons because what didn't work, if I had chosen to be negative, quote unquote, around it, or you know, have an opinion or some kind of a hate toward my ex-husband, which I don't. I have nothing but just love and appreciation for the time that we share together. But I chose to give that relationship the meaning that it was successful and that I grew in ways that I never thought I could, and learn lessons about what it is to be in a partnership, in a relationship, in, you know, in collaboration with another human being, in that kind of a committed, significant relationship. So those are, you know, you can really rewrite the meaning to anything in your life, because you can use it to be a strength, or you could use it to be a defeat. And I think that everything that we've experienced, good and bad, and I hate to even use those words because then it gives a judgment to it, but I think that everything that we've experienced actually can be used to strengthen us and move us forward. And I think that everything that has happened to us on purpose. I think that everything that's occurred was designed for you to use it for growth, for your expansion, for what's next. And so that's an example. That's one example of my life, you know, because there are many times when, you know, I've been in a situation and I could have drowned in it, or I could have said, there's something here for me. What is this about? What can I give? What is this here to show me? How can I rise to this as opposed to, you know, succumb to it? So that's an example.
It's a good one, and I think there's so many people out there that struggle with divorce and post-divorce life and relationships that no longer work, whether they were married or divorced. So I appreciate you sharing that personal story, because I really think that can help people. Well, we whizzed past the halfway point of the show, and I didn't even promo the next few shows here on the Life Coach Radio Network, so let me just take a moment to do that. Tomorrow, Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, Me Optimize is our awesome show with style coach Tiffany Dixon. She's going to give a detailed tutorial on identifying your body type. Yes, Oprah has done the body type episode, and Tiffany Dixon is going to do it here tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern. So once she helps you figure out if you're an hourglass, a pear, an apple, a newspaper, or a lamp, and I don't even know what all those shapes are, she'll then go over the ABCs for each body type, accentuate this, balance those, and camouflage that. That's tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern, and then Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern. In one of the most popular songs of Whitney Houston's career, she sang that learning to love yourself is the greatest love of all, which Federica and Melvin talk about in their book, and little did we know we were going to talk about it two nights apart. So Tuesday night's episode of Life Coach Chat, coaches Barb Hetzel, Dexter Cicero, and Tim Billiter will discuss the importance of self-acceptance and the role it plays in learning to love oneself. Great topic. That's Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. As always, you can listen at blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network. That's blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network. And if you want to make sure you don't miss any of our awesome content, then just go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network, and you can click on the follow icon right under our picture in the left-hand side of your screen, and you can send us a message, give us feedback. You can also follow us on Twitter. It's Coach Host Radio. That's Coach Host Radio. If you tweet at us during the show, we will try and read it by the end of the episode. You can like us on Facebook too, Life Coach Radio Network. That's Life Coach Radio Network. Okay, on to chapter 3. Melvin, back to you. Chapter 3, what is your deepest prayer? So it's interesting you guys have this as a chapter. What would you say to someone who is listening to this that is not religious?
Well, people look at me like I'm crazy sometimes when I say, I'm actually not religious.
You work as a preacher, right?
Yes.
Okay, just wanted to make sure people knew that.
Yes, I am a minister. They do call me reverend. I am ordained. I perform the sacraments. But really, in my own mind, in my own sense of being, I'm not a religious person. I'm spiritual. I'm deeply spiritual. And spirituality and religion don't always, they can be related, but they don't have to at all. And whether we believe in God or Buddha or some sense of being or universality, or we're atheists and we don't believe in it at all, we still have a sense of spirituality. Spirituality has to do with our own personal spirit, or the things that encourage us, the things that make us sad, the things that bring us hope, the things that bring us healing. All of that is part of our spirituality. And so whether we have stepped foot in a church or a temple or a synagogue or a mosque, or whether we've stepped into our own being, in our own sense of understanding of who we are, whether we've been baptized in our own tears, you know, and I use baptized as a religious symbol, but really, you know, under being emerged in our own sense of self, we have a spirit, and our spirits are powerful and independent of any belief in some other larger being. We still have a being, you know, and our being is powerful. The fact that we are alive is a force to be reckoned with. Our own being, you know, the breath of life is a power, because you have the power to not only transform your life, but anybody you come in contact with. And so the practices here are intended to be a strengthening and empowering of the spirit. This is your own spirit. And the deeper you're able to go in your own spirit, the deeper you're able to go with someone else in theirs. You can't connect to someone else if you haven't gone that deep in your own. And so it deepens your power the more you even understand yourself. And so these different practices are a journey and tools. They're tools. We're not right about anything, but it's a point of view that we have found in our experience of doing thousands of workshops, a history of work that has empowered people to understand themselves, to give them the ability to organize your thoughts, your opinions, and feelings in ways that empower you versus disempower you, ways they are creative instead of degenerative. You know, and as we look at these different things, I mean, that is really the depth of even religion itself comes from the power of beings, you know, and so that's why we even talk about being. And so, you know, we are our deepest prayer.
And so it's not, if I'm paraphrasing what you talk about in the book, it's not necessarily a literal prayer that you would think of, you know, when, you know, I grew up Catholic, for instance, you know, when you go to the building, whatever it was, of repeating the prayer that everybody says that you say every week. What's your definition of prayer as you describe it in this chapter? What's your deepest prayer?
When we talk about prayer, oftentimes prayer is, you have multiple forms of prayer. There's prayer like to a God. Sometimes there's prayer insofar as a mantra. There's different prayer. But really, for us, even in this chapter, it's to be is a particular prayer. And it's the words, the thoughts, the songs, the music of your soul that brings you strength, courage, healing, peace. And that is so different for each and every one of us. And really connecting to, again, that deepest part of ourselves. And oftentimes we're afraid to go to that place, you know. And I believe it was, I want to say Barbara Winters, I hope that is correct. But talks about, you know, when you're at the edge of the greatest light that you know, and you're ready, you know, you're at that edge, that's where faith comes in, because either two things. Either you will jump off and land on somewhere new, or you'll jump off and you'll learn how to fly. And the belief in one of those two things will happen is faith. And that's part of that, the depth of what you know. And when we, like we talked earlier about doubt, you know, the doubt may never go away. It may never, ever go away. But if you're anchored in a belief about yourself, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I am okay. I am whole. I am perfect. And I am complete just the way I am. And inside of me is a great, great gift. Not maybe, not perhaps, not if the circumstances of the situation tells me I'm powerful or not. No, it is. And how do we know? Our only evidence is, one, every breath is evidence that the universe has use of us. Every day we wake up is an opportunity to, I say have it be right again, but I hate saying right or wrong, but every day is an opportunity to be again.
That's so good, so good. And I also love in this chapter that you talk about gratitude. I'm writing a book on it, so we can talk about that if we have time. If not, I'll fill you in off air. But you say gratitude is giving thanks for everything, the good. good and the bad. Oh, my gosh. What a novel concept. So tell me more. Why is it important to be grateful for the bad?
Well, I think, and again, I don't, good and bad, when I say that, it has a judgment to it, as if, it's right or wrong. But if I can really look at anything that's occurring, whether it's painful, whether I'm experiencing pain or sadness or a loss, or whether it's joy or love, if I can look at that situation and be thankful for the situation, I will find the blessing in the situation. It actually coincides with even my example from before, which is, my marriage or any job that I was quote unquote fired from. And then I forget that about 2 months before I said, I don't want to do this anymore. And then all of a sudden they said, you know what, maybe you should go do something else. And even in that moment of the, I can't believe this, I reminded myself, oh, but wait, I was really ready to move on anyway, But if you can really look at your life and be thankful for everything that has occurred, even the painful moments, to not be glad that it occurred, because I'm not for a second saying, there are things that you wouldn't be glad that happened. But if you can look at it from a point of view of gratitude, of being thankful, because it will, anything that has been a challenge or anything that has been, a source of pain or loss, there you have overcome it. That there is, in looking at it from a place of gratitude, of thankfulness, that you actually are resilient enough, that you are actually big enough, that you have actually, that you are enough to overcome that situation. And I see it month after month in the workshops that I do with people who have experienced atrocities in their life, who are on 2 feet, who are, who have marriages and who have lives and children, and who choose to have there be life, a life of contribution and service with what's occurred to them in their life, because they have looked at that event as a place to be powerful from, and not to be, as I referenced before, not to be drowned by that situation, but to look at it and say, if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't have learned this about myself. If that atrocity hadn't occurred, I wouldn't have realized how powerful I am, or how I can overcome that, how I can forgive what occurred, not just in the other person, but in myself. And so I think gratitude is the key to everything, to peace, to love, to abundance, it's really, and when you shift to gratitude, to being thankful for everything, what you focus on expands. What you focus your mind on actually is what you get. You give what you get. It's a law. It's a universal law, cause and effect. So I think that's gratitude is the greatest gift.
I agree 1,000%, and that's why I'm writing a book on it. So more on that later. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so we're nearing the end of the show. We're all the way up to chapter 4. Oh, my gosh. But that means I'm just going to have you guys back again. So we'll go to chapter 4 and then figure out when we're going to have part 2 of the special 2-part episode, You Matter. Okay, are you the one? That is such a great question. You ask a sacred question that is so perfectly worded. What would forgiveness of people or events make possible for you? My God, the power of forgiveness, I get it. But for people who are having so much trouble forgiving, what's the one thing you can tell them that will get them over the finish line, that will help them forgive the person that they're not forgiving. And you referenced it earlier, Melvin, in, I can't remember exactly the context, but that people live in the past and they let these things hound them and they suck the life out of them. How can people move past it?
Forgiveness. They say love is the greatest power in the universe. And I say on the other side of love is forgiveness. And you know, sometimes people have done things to us that are unconscionable. And things have happened to us that are more sinful than sinning, more soul-sickening. But as long as we hold the anger and hold the hurt inside of us, it's like a cancer that, one, eats away at us inside, and two, completely disempowers us. And part of it is in letting it go, letting it go, really recognizing that this is a cancer and acknowledging it. This doesn't mean that it's okay that it happened. It doesn't mean that they're off the hook for it. It doesn't mean that you did something that is your fault. It's no blame or anything, but rather learning to let it go. Because, one, you reclaim your power. You reclaim your power. As long as you won't forgive someone else, there's a hold on your power. There's a hold on your power, on your ability to fly. It's as if your wings are tied behind your back. And forgiveness is not about the other person. Forgiveness is for us, the forgiver. It's all about the forgiver. And in letting that go, it's a completely different experience of life. So, one, letting it go. Two, reclaiming your power inside of it. And three, experiencing your life as you dream it. That's what forgiveness is about, and letting it go.
Yeah, and when people forgive, they can be more on the path to becoming their one. And in the book it says, your purpose is to realize the part of the whole that only you were created to fulfill. And some people haven't yet chosen that they're the one. And I love your analogy. It's like getting a special delivery package and saying, this person doesn't live here, which is just so great because it smacks them in the face almost that you're not living the life that you can live. And so as life coaches, we see that people just aren't yet doing it and there are things holding them back. So I love in this chapter, there are questions and exercises that can really help people in this area. What are some questions they can ask themselves or exercises that they can do to really help make a shift?
In with forgiveness? Or
either with forgiveness or really this point about not yet becoming the one that they're intended to give. So either things that are causing them pain or times when their heart was closed off. What should people do to really make a shift, either with forgiveness or in becoming their one?
Wow. You know, I think that, you know, something that, you know, Melvin said before around not forgiving, and I wanted to just add to that because I was thinking about that, which it literally, you know, he mentioned cancer and, you know, the unwillingness to forgive will actually could kill you, you know, because when you, you know, like I said, thought is so powerful and we kind of touch on it, but really thought is so powerful. And so when you hold unloving thoughts and unforgiving thoughts, you're actually directing it at yourself. You're not directing it at anyone else. It actually impacts you more, you know, and those around you, of course, but you're in that holding that, you're actually only impacting you. And so to transition to the heart of the matter, which is the fourth practice, and are you the one hearing the voice of God, that that practice is really around, you know, accessing the heart, accessing the space of the heart, which is love and forgiveness and gratitude and giving and receiving. And in that space is, you know, everything is energy. You know, quantum. What I love about science now is that science is now mathematically kind of proving, or now there's proof of what ancients and mystics have been saying for eons, that everything is energy and pain is energy, joy is energy, and there's a flow that occurs. And so when you access the heart space, when you open the heart space, you can fully experience everything you're experiencing. And you, in the same moment, we see children do it all the time. In one moment they are crying, and the next they're laughing, because they are fully expressed beings. And so the willingness to access your heart, the willingness to open up the heart space, is the space of forgiveness. You know, it's you know, a lot of people talk about the heart in the body is actually where the Christ seed Adam lies. And, you know, Christ was, the message of Jesus Christ was forgiveness and love and compassion, and that's where that part of us lives. And our willingness to open up that space and access that space courageously, because sometimes there's stuff there that most people would rather not talk about, be with, encounter, experience, but there really is another side to it. And I often say, you know, you can't selectively open up Pandora's box. You can't say, oh, I just want to experience joy for the rest of my life without opening up every other experience. Because you can't, when you shut down one part of you, you think you're shutting down a part of you, you're shutting down all of you. So there, I think that practice of opening up that heart space and just experiencing what's there is a powerful, you know, it's so crazy, because I really think of all the practices just delve, they just keep drilling down. I can't talk about one without talking about another, because they all interrelate to themselves. And, I think, you know, being authentic with what you're experiencing and allowing what you're experiencing allows for that opening of the heart and realizing your connection to everyone and everything, which then leads to, you know, living a life of contribution, because you understand that you are connected to everyone and everything. So it's a huge conversation. I don't even know how much more time we have.
I know. Well, we're at the 1 hour mark, but that just means we're going to have an incredibly robust Part 2 episode with chapters 5, 6, and 7. You both have so much incredible insight and shared so many great concepts both in your book and on this broadcast tonight. So we talked about gratitude a few minutes ago. I am so grateful for both of you that you collaborated, you wrote the book, that we have come to know each other, that you shared it with me, that our collective listeners, people that are fans of you, fans of me, can hear all of the great wisdom that you both shared tonight. So thank you, thank you, thank you so much for being here. If people want to get in touch with you, you're welcome. If people want to get in touch with you, Melvin, what's the best way to do so?
You can find me on Facebook, Melvin Miller. You can also find me at Fort Washington Church. I'm there. You can find me on Instagram, Melvin JPM, or Twitter, Reverend MJ Miller.
All right, good stuff. And if people want to get the book, how can they do so, Federica?
They can go to audiogo.com/US/YouMatter, or it's available on Amazon, on iTunes, Barnes & Noble. There's the audio and the companion workbook, so they work together that way. And I'm on Facebook, Federica Baldan. You can find me there, and Twitter as well. But, yeah, so that's where I can be found.
All right, so awesome. And I loved the workbook. You saw me and all the notes that I've scribbled as a result of this great experience, You Matter. So We realize that we matter, and hopefully all of you listening tonight realize that you matter, because you do matter. And by realizing that you matter, you can help make the world a better place. And if you take as a to-do, after listening to this broadcast, to tell somebody that they matter to you, that would be such an incredible thing. So I implore you to do that. Thank you for listening to this Life Coach Radio Network broadcast. If you want to follow us on Facebook, it's Life Coach Radio Network. Twitter, it's Coach Host Radio. Or you can go to blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network and click the follow button on the left-hand side of the screen. And then you'll get to know about each and every show that we have, and you'll be able to send us a message, give us feedback, tell us what you want more of, less of, etc. And again, remember the next two shows, Monday night at 8, Me Optimize, Tiffany Dixon gives a detailed tutorial of identifying your body type. I cannot wait for that. And then Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, Life Coach Chat, the importance of self-acceptance and the role it plays in learning to love oneself. I'm Russ Terry, the creator and executive producer here on the Life Coach Radio Network. For my incredible guests, Melvin Miller and Federica Baldan, thank you so much for listening, and we hope to see you again. And the three of us will keep you posted on when part two is. Stay tuned for that. Have a great night, everyone.